Hi, and welcome to It's Complicated, a podcast about healthcare ethics and practice, presented by the Nova Scotia Health Ethics Network, or NCHEN. I'm Amanda Porter, a member of the operations team here at NCHEN, and I'll be your host for this discussion. Today's podcast is the latest in our series exploring access to healthcare. This episode follows from NCHEN's recent podcast with Dr. Christy Simpson about access to healthcare for rural communities. Today, we'll be looking more closely at some of the particular ethics issues for more rural communities and the healthcare providers and administrators who live and work there. I'm very pleased to introduce our guests for today's discussion, Tara Rutherford and Roberta Duchesne. Tara Rutherford is the Health Services Manager at Musquodoboit Valley Memorial Hospital and Musquodoboit Valley Home for Special Care in Middle Musquodoboit, Nova Scotia. Before moving into leadership, Tara worked for approximately 17 years in frontline nursing in both urban and rural settings. We're very pleased to have you here today, Tara.
Thank you, Amanda. I'm excited to be here.
Also joining us is Roberta Duchesne, who is the Director of Rural and Community Sites in the Central Zone of Nova Scotia Health. So this includes Eastern Shore Memorial Hospital, Harborview Lodge, Musquodoboit Valley Memorial Hospital, Brayside, Twin Oaks Memorial Hospital in Musquodoboit Harbor, and Hants Community Hospital in Windsor.
Hi, Amanda. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you both for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. So maybe we could start by setting the scene a little bit. Roberta, I'm wondering if you could tell us at a high level about the facilities that you manage and the range of health services that are provided in these locations.
So I have four sites that have three long-term care facilities attached to it. We range from seeing people that have to be admitted to hospital for issues that would be considered to be stable medicine. And we have alternative level of care clients as well, which would be super stable, usually waiting for placement in long-term care, home to go home with supports. Our long-term care clients are long-term care clients. We have different levels of eMERGE departments, ranging from urgent care centers to urgent treatment centers to collaborative emergency centers with a level 4 eMERGE during the day and a level 3 emergency center enhance.
So a very wide range of kinds of facilities and types of care that you're providing.
Yeah. So our population would be, we can look after anybody from birth to death in those sites.
So we've heard stories from across the country about the difficulty of keeping more rural emergency healthcare facilities operating, sometimes related to challenges in recruiting and retaining a sufficient number of physicians and nurses. And we've also heard some of these same challenges arising in more urban emergency departments as well. So Tara, for those of us who don't live and work in rural areas in Nova Scotia, how would you say access to care has changed over time for patients and their families?
So I think over the years where we've seen some losses of resources that we were accustomed to, that being emergency physicians to staff our emergency departments as well as nursing staff, among the two that I think of at the top of my head, we've had to use creative ways to still provide care to our communities. So we've done that in a few different ways. Most of that is looking outside of the box to see, what are the resources that we do have? What do we have within our communities and within our collective resources as we work together within the facilities that Roberta mentioned? And how can we provide care that makes sense? So we look at data, we look at the care that we had provided in the past, and how can we sustain that? So through some of that journey is how we landed at transitioning to urgent treatment centers. So looking at the right place for patients to be seen to have timely access, and those who have higher acuity health situations to direct them more to the urban centers, and then pulling our community members from those larger urban centers back to our sites where we can provide them with treatment here within our resources.
Roberta, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think what we've learned to do over the time that we've been working in those communities is figuring out ways to engage the community in helping provide solutions to their challenges, and it's sort of empowering them to figure out what it is that they're looking for, and then how do we support them and build capacity in that group to help us deliver services, whether it's through feedback or we've created a nonprofit community organization that is doing work around health promotion and navigation for those what we call the tri-facilities communities, which would be the Musquodoboit Valley, Musquodoboit Harbor, and Sheet Harbor area. So we've leveraged the strengths in those communities where they want to be involved and engaged, and we've tried to figure out ways to help them get involved in things like recruitment, which you had mentioned before. They're very engaged in working, especially in the Sheet Harbor community, very engaged in working towards having those physician positions filled, and how they're supporting the physicians in that community looks a little bit different than it does in the rest of the communities right now.
Some of the community groups, like Roberta said, are really taking a hold with us and trying to recruit and looking at recruitment, not just to the facilities as well, but to our communities. So some of the actions that they have taken is if we have a physician, for example, that's interested, we may show them the facility, but then the community will also take them out and show them what they have to offer for them as well, which has made a huge difference in our recruitment strategies.
They're helping do things like finding rentals for them. They're buying gift baskets and leaving them on their front step, driving them back and forth from the airport when they're coming and looking to see whether or not this is the place they want to live. Like, they're pretty engaged. It's great.
That is great. So it sounds like it's a real grassroots community effort.
Yeah.
To attend to kind of the whole person, not just kind of showing them the hospital where they might be working.
I imagine that with some of the changes that rural areas in particular have been experiencing these past few years, that there have probably been quite a few unanticipated challenges, some predictable ones, but maybe also some unanticipated ones for frontline healthcare providers that are still working in these facilities. And I'm wondering if you could give us some examples of the kinds of frontline ethics challenges that have come up for nursing staff who've been working through this transition from having, say, an emergency department to having instead having an urgent care center.
So some of the challenges that I can think of that we saw our staff kind of transition through is they're looking at care from a different perspective, from a different lens than when we were providing emergency care. They're looking at it through that timely access to care in the sense of, are we the right facility to provide this care? And if not, how can we help that patient guide through the system to get them to that care access point that makes the most sense? That's been a challenge for the nurses in an unexpected way. And some of the feedback that we hear from them is that they feel like they're not helping patients in the same way that they were prior. For example, if there was someone who came into the facility and they were looking for urgent treatment, but their health situation really dictated that they needed more emergent care, our staff would then engage with EHS to try to transport that patient to an urban center. The staff kind of feel a little grievanced in the way that we used to take those folks in and start to plan their care. And so changing that perspective that we're still planning their care, it just looks a little different than that hands-on that we were doing in the past. So that transition has been challenging.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be challenging for staff who are accustomed to sort of jumping right in to instead working more towards sort of, I suppose, stabilizing someone in an immediate way and arranging for their transportation. And, you know, is it sometimes the case that there could be a bit of a delay too that might complicate that situation?
There is definitely cases where there is a delay in transportation. And during that time, the staff are working within their scope to keep patients comfortable. And that sometimes can pose challenges, especially if we're used to providing care in a different way with different resources.
Yeah. That'd be, imagine, very challenging. I also imagine that in some of these places, members of the community would have been sort of old habits die hard, and that there might be quite a transition for members of the community to get the hang of what a new system looks like and where they should be going when.
There's been a lot of education that the staff have taken on to provide to the community at that access point for exactly what you're referring to. A lot of times, it's such a huge change from coming to say this site in Muscarrabat Valley to receive emergency care, and then to be told that, you know, you'll need to be transported off to a different site when they would be used to receiving that care here. So definitely there are some times where that's really hard, and that's hard for the folks that are frontline and they're having those conversations. They're having their own feelings that go with that. And at the very core of it, they really just want to provide good care to their community.
Roberta, did you want to add anything to that?
So I'm sitting here thinking about the different perspective that I have and the type of work that we've been doing with our partners like EHS or EMCI, which are the providers for EHS is the provincial arm. I guess they are the ones that from the government that hold the contract with EMCI, who actually delivers the service, the ambulance service in the communities. And I'm thinking about the different perspective we've been working really closely with that team to figure out ways to fill those gaps. So what Tara was identifying in the, you know, the amount of time that sometimes it takes for an ambulance to arrive in a rural community, especially in those areas like Sheet Harbor that are more than an hour away from the nearest regional. And so how we've been talking about working on how we support the staff during that gap when there are no physicians on site. And somebody may just walk into the hospital and be very sick. So, you know, how do we communicate to community that we are there, we're always open, but we may not be able to provide the care. So we've worked on different tools like that the staff could use to support a patient coming in without a physician on site. And we've got some other things that we're working on too, but it's been an interesting conversation with the community. It's hard because, I mean, we're going from no service because the emergency departments were closed due to whether it was staffing, physician recruitment, for whatever reason they were closed, to opening with a different level of service from what they're used to, which is what you guys are talking about. So one of the things that we've done is try to engage them in those changes. So what is it that you need? What are you afraid of? Figuring out where the gaps are and then trying to figure out ways to fill those gaps. So we've built care directives. For example, we've took a list of a bunch of things that we had identified that would be things that if nursing were working to their absolute full scope, they could work or could support somebody for a period of time without physician oversight. And we've changed some of those care directives so that the nursing feel a little bit more supported. And we have some other things that we're doing. That's just an example. It's really about the community's confidence in us and how we are supporting them with their healthcare journeys, and they want their care to be provided in their communities. They don't want to go to a regional somewhere with a doctor they don't know. These are their facilities. So I think we have a responsibility to make sure that we can do as much as we can with them in their communities, whether we're engaging them in the conversations about what we can and can't do and being honest and truthful about that, or engaging them in the conversations to say, okay, so we can go this far. Do you have any other ideas? What else could we do? What could you do? Going back to, you know, the recruitment and retention conversations again.
Thanks so much. That's really interesting. You know, both the comment about the need to be honest about the limitations of the system, but also the need to try to rethink and be creative and be nimble and think about different ways that certain kinds of services might be sustained and maintained.
It's been a very interesting journey in kind of taking a deep dive into what we can do and what we are capable of and what we can be capable of in the future to meet those needs that Roberta was talking about, the feedback that we've received from community, but really expanding it to provide as much care as we can at our sites.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit here now. I'm curious if you'd be willing to talk about your personal experiences as administrators during these transitions. It seems like there might be some advantages, but also some disadvantages to the overlapping relationships that you might have with people who are your neighbors or friends in the community, but who are also maybe patients or family members of patients in the facilities that you oversee. So I'm wondering if you might be willing to sort of comment on the relative closeness of these communities and the overlapping relationships that you might have there when you live and work in one and the same area. So I'll just invite either of you to comment on that.
So Tara is the only one of the two of us that actually lives in the communities that we serve. So I'm going to have to leave that one with you, Tara.
No, I'm happy to talk about that. I mean, that was part of my own personal journey when I transitioned from urban nursing to the community that I grew up in, and then to provide care to folks who are my neighbors, my friends, and my family. And there's a lot of challenges that come with that, but there's a lot of benefits that come with that as well, because you're caring for your patients in a more holistic way, in a sense that, you know, it's you're journeying with them through their continuing of care. It's not a point in time contact. So, you know, you see folks in the community and they are excited to tell you that, you know, that they had some good test results or, you know, whatever the case may be. And there's a little bit of personal satisfaction that comes with being a part of that journey for them. It is challenging because you do feel a different set of emotions when you're caring for those folks as well. As far as working through the transitions that we've worked through in the last couple of years, I have found it very satisfying actually to be a part of positive change. And I feel like I am providing back to my community in a way that is going to sustain healthcare for my family and for my friends, and really being a part of that positive change. So personally, I feel very committed to the topic and very committed to the success of it for those reasons, for those personal relationships.
Thanks, Tara. I really appreciate that personal perspective. So since Tara took that one, I'll throw this one to you, Roberta. I'm wondering if, looking back on your work in these past few years, what advice would you give to other administrators who are navigating the complete or intermittent closures of their emergency departments or other big systemic changes in the health system?
I think the most important thing is to remember that the community are really engaged and involved. And if you can get them on board positively, It will help you get traction with the changes that you need to make to improve the access, right? They can be helpful. They can be creative. They're innovative. You have a lot of positive experiences. I think, Tara, we can say that most of our experiences have been really positive working with the community on the projects that we've been working with them on. So that would be the most important thing, I think.
I think sometimes there's a bit of fear maybe that the work that you're doing is not going to be received by the community in the way that you want it to, or that there's a fear that you, despite your best efforts, are not able to accomplish what you're set out to accomplish. But I think Roberta is very right. It's been very positive, and it's been a very, very good, I feel good to be part of that work. So yeah, I agree. Very positive.
This has been a really interesting discussion. I really appreciated your comments there about the importance of collaboration and engagement with community. And it's clear from your answers to some of these questions that you both care deeply about the communities in which you work. So thank you. The title of this podcast is It's Complicated. So I'm wondering if, to finish us off, if you might be able to quickly summarize what's complicated about access to care.
One of the hardest things that I've had to do is go out to community to say that there is nothing that I can do to fix these closures, that we're going to have to adjust and do something different. I think that was the most complicated, difficult piece of doing all of this work for me.
So being honest about your limitations, but also kind of communicating them transparently and, you know, retaining relationships and carrying on.
Yeah, with integrity, being authentic, being real about what's happening from our end of things. Absolutely.
And maintaining that solution focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that there might be a wish to just go back to the way things were. You know, why can't we just do that? How you navigate those conversations, both individually, but with groups as well that you might be speaking with. I imagine that's quite difficult.
It was complicated. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Tara and Roberta, for sharing your insight and reflections. We appreciate your time tremendously. We are also grateful for production support from Lisbeth Wittoff-Nielsen, Kristen Lesko-Scary, and the team at Dalhousie MedIT. Thanks to Ben Capps for our theme music, and most of all, thanks to you for listening. Until next time.